I wonder if there's a kind of haunt, another specter, which is a kind of like false consciousness, like finger shaking of like, you think you're doing something liberatory, but you're not, or something that makes the disconnect between the practice and the criticism or the theorist and the artist really concrete. And, you know, there's some of that in Olive's analysis of riots as well, that a close specific example might have kind of helped us get a way out of. So that's really my concern. So I'm going to allow the panelists in any order that you want to respond to any of our responses, and then also, you've been very patient and quiet now for 2 hours, and we are given permission now to go about 20 minutes over, if you'll let us, you know, to give you a chance to shake your fingers at us a little bit as well. So I'll open it up to you guys if you want to riff on some of our responses or other papers, or we can get questions who are... Yes, Abe, thank you.
So question for Olive. I really like the paper. I want to challenge you a little bit on one point, which is your understanding of the body. Because it seems to me that particularly in riots, in the course of riots, the very idea of the human body as like a bounded subject begins to dissolve. So if you look at the writing of like theorists of crowds, Tardet, Netty, even Freud, they clearly understood that the crowd is not composed of bounded individuals, but rather is a totally different type of social object, or social entity. I want to suggest that perhaps the riotous crowd is neither an individual nor a collective, but rather is multiple, or in the Deleuzean sense, like a multiplicity. It's an ontological social level that is not reducible to individuals, to the traditional political subject. And I think that calls into question the very understanding of the riot as a political act, you know, in the capital P political sense. I think that in a certain way, the riot defies politics or destroys politics. So I guess I just want to suggest that maybe the body that you're talking about is not the human body, but rather like a mass body or just a mass. And if you look at like social scientists that have tried to understand riots consistently, they describe like riotous crowds as sort of a mass or an amoeba or something like that, as opposed to individuals. And that's one of the reasons why like law enforcement has so much trouble dealing with riots, because, you know, riots don't conform to typical understandings of what people do and how they act.
No, I don't have some kind of a centralized concept of the body, that it's like some discrete thing, but I don't really talk about that at all. I mean, there's a little bit of a gesture to like the riot as a kind of closest, like, it's a process that like reforms the body. And it's a problem for dance studies, like this emphasis on corporeality while understanding that it's a moving target, conceptually and materially over time, what's in and outside of the body. But yeah, I'm going to steal that. The amoebic crowd body.
I'll give you a sight.
Okay.
I think your comment also brings up a kind of theme that continues to come up, which is the kind of usefulness of uselessness in art and the non-instrumentality of some of these things as being somehow powerful, that we want to latch on to that. And it seems like this tension between capital P political and this is getting at that use of the aesthetic and art. And it's something that I think you talk about as well, in a way, with the instrumental person. I don't know if you want to discuss that at all. But.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to address Dara's question.
Sure.
About kind of what are the stakes, what's the resistance. Like, I kind of hoped that maybe in terms of art we communicated that, but it's like bound up in a kind of, in its relationship as kind of, kind of purposeless purpose, or kind of its determination by kind of commodity relations, but in with a moment of kind of undetermination, you know, and a kind of moment of both kind of, kind of art is a kind of conscious and unconscious act in that sense. And then but I did kind of want to, I guess, draw some sort of analogy with the kind of things that Olive was talking about. And there's an image I'm going to show in a second, which sort of sums this up a bit for me. I'll put it on. Months ago, and I guess like Marina might disagree somewhat with this, I guess, this proposition, but I suppose the crossover between the kind of aesthetic theory that we're talking about and maybe communization theory kind of gets played out in the sort of we mentioned the guy Bruno Asturian. He talks about crisis activity, he talks about production without productivity. And there's a kind of sense here in which in this kind of crisis, these crisis moments, people kind of mock use values. They mock their social domination through acts, and they directly satisfy needs in ways which haven't kind of which can't happen, don't happen under capital. So, and this is kind of opportunity in women breaking open a supermarket with mannequin legs is kind of like some sort of crude idea of that, like where you have a completely subjective relationship to, you know, supposed necessities or things. I understand this as a pen, someone else understands it as a kind of moustache or a decoration or a digging tool or, you know, just a, yeah.
So I suppose that's kind of what we were trying to point to, is that art makes us see the contingency of objects and the contingency of use values, which has a sort of dimension in relation to maybe broader politics of destabilizing concepts, traditional concepts of emancipation, as well as concepts which are more related to the reproduction of capital. So there was a kind of, well, a lot of what we took out was this kind of trying to really ground this contingency of use value as being part of value. Mm-hmm. And that you often have a kind of fairly ahistorical and neutralized assessment of use value, even in a lot of Marxist aesthetics. So that's, we kind of lightly skated over that, but I think definitely, I don't disagree with that, by the way. Questions about communization, I think, are sometimes presentational, but they're not related to that. I guess what you were talking about, attention to particularity and sort of the potential of close formal analysis. I mean, just to kind of quickly say, we did have a lot of examples.
You were good at that. You had APG, and in the paper they talked about the Mutsu Maps as well. So there's a lot of good examples. I wasn't saying they weren't there. I guess when I read the paper, my initial response though was that they're there for a particular purpose. Mm. And with a close analysis of the APG, you could get obviously
which
a lot more. But I wondered if some of the excess of the meaning of them.
Yeah.
Could actually change at all your analysis.
But that's also something that we maybe took out, but something I've done a lot in my own sort of work elsewhere.
I can only do so much.
Just kind of pointing exactly to this sort of excess and this indeterminacy as being, well, here I think we mainly focused on its kind of instrumentalization of indeterminacy, but elsewhere you kind of also just the way we're just talking about objects and use values, also the kind of use values of certain politics or certain apolitical determinations. Like, for instance, they would have always would kind of confront this accusation of being kind of social democratic illusions or being kind of stooges of the establishment by saying, you know, we're, you know, this whole, like, time-based theory of John Latham, and, you know, we can't assess these consequences in the short term. Left and right have no meaning. I mean, it's like kind of a common gesture in many ways. But I suppose I'm also sort of quite interested in bringing it back to this kind of discussion of objects and concepts that we get in Adorno, particularity and non-identity, especially when kind of trying to think about the contingency of use as being a kind of political project that art can help us.
But Adorno is terrible at dealing with objects, which I think is one of the reasons why he's a great, I love his theory, but I think he's he never talks about actual things unless someone, aside from music.
Music, yeah.
He's
yeah.
also Schoenberg, but,
yeah.
You know, someone like, so I think this is, I'm still actually
yeah.
struggling for a good example of a method that does this well, and I would say Benjamin's essay on surrealism is probably
mm-hmm.
the closest thing. Does this make sense to the audience, what we're talking about? This kind of...
But there all constantly has to be a reflexivity in that.
Of course. Yeah.
That's what makes it always unstable.
Yeah.
Contradictory between the close, between the particularity and the kind of the principle that the analysis and the object will always be somehow, you know,
and your own,
impossible.
And then I also think you, as the researcher, I always want that to be part of it as well, and like our political project. I mean, I don't know if a lot of you have relationships to militant research as a practice. Not something I'm at all interested in sequestering as that. I don't like the word, but I think that's why I like the art historical materialism mantra, because it gets us away from social art history, militant research, and these things that are special and takes, you know, our own subjectivity of, you know, what is to be done. You know, I feel very passionate that there is something that in our own presentations that could contribute to critical theory itself. We're not just standing outside of it and analyzing art and standing outside of it and tinkering with theory. We're actually producers of knowledge. Oh, another word I really hate. Knowledge production. Big in the art world. Anyway, I've talked enough. Oksana, would you like, before we
yeah.
disband, to respond to any of the comments?
Well, there were some questions I wanted to
yeah.
Probably I will start from what you were talking about, because maybe it's more painful field, I have to say, of what I was trying to say, to talk about these relationships between art practice and theory, because now I'm talking as a philosopher talking about art. It's quite a typical example, and
mm-hmm.
I'm not always like that. Sometimes I enjoy more straightforward philosophy without any attachment to artistic practice. But since it's a part of my living experience, so I sometimes just have something to say, and sometimes what I have to say is quite sad. So. For example, I remember when it was the second Moscow Biennale, first it was the first Moscow Biennale, some years ago, which was very rich and glamorous, and there were like a lot of luxury. And then after, in all the like Western media, there were a lot of criticism towards this Biennale for the lack of discourse, or for the lack of leftist critics and so on, for the lack of critical discourse, let's say. The next 2 years, second Moscow Biennale, the organizers, they decided just to invite all the like talking heads, so like Ranciere, I don't know, Chantal Mouffe, Žižek, Agamben, put them all together and make them talk about art. So it was like a huge panel, and it was like they all got like a huge fee or something from this Russian oil money, and it works like that. And the fact that, and how is it connected with what I was talking about before? And how is it connected with the topic of memory and being in a way faithful to a certain expectations, to a certain hopes cherished by the generation of artists in the past. So I was talking, I was thinking about avant-garde and productionism and all those practices which came with revolutionary movement at the beginning of 20th century. And it was a really great attempt to combine political practice and theory and art to together. And 20th century is really the epoch of this aesthetical turn in theory and vice versa. I feel that now this epoch really comes to an end in the sense that it's just a kind of intuition, it works like I don't really believe in the idea of positive, negative, positive uselessness of art as uselessness and joy as a real political praxis. It's a very important and complicated topic. I was working a lot on Bataille, for example, for whom it was quite a big part of his work. For him, uselessness was like a weapon against the productive machine of capitalism, of socialism, or whatever. But the problem is that, for example, when you dance, then you go home. Then you go back home. It's a kind of a local ride. It's beautiful, but I have a serious problems with the Kantian, the very Kantian idea, because for me, it's just precisely the point which is the beginning, which was the beginning of the idea of autonomy of art had developed to its deadlock, because Kantian idea of the autonomy of aesthetical judgment, which has no any instance of any external criteria. So that was the the idea from which paradoxically the readers of Badiou and Adorno now talking that maybe art should not be attached to politics, because there's a ideology and instrumentalization of art, maybe it has its own freedom in itself, and we should start on this. And there are a lot of, for example, talks about the space, speciality, the search for space of autonomy, space of autonomy zone, the space, free space, instead of talking about time, for example. Because there are two autonomies. One autonomy is about the creating a certain zone of a local domestic riot, and the other is autonomy, which is about movement and time, which is about this. This is a kind of breaking borders, this way is somehow abandoned. Because what was at stake in avant-garde and production is, it's not uselessness, it's the use, it's a kind of use, and that was the idea to abolish art and to mix it with life somehow, and this is somehow the point which we cannot about which we do not have remembrance. Which we forgot, and this is like a Beninian past, which requires, in a way, our attention. But it's kind of difficult to deal with that. Does it make sense? So,
yeah.
But I'm talking too long. I was.
Yeah, we're gonna take a question.
Yeah.
Precisely some ways, the kind of things after productivism, Stalinism, socialist realism, kind of, which is also kind of metaphysical thing in a very interesting way, a kind of restarting of the metaphysical form of art is precisely what's lost. So in other words, for our memory, for academia here doing art history, doing cultural studies, precisely this, it's still a kind of evil that is not fully understood. So that I think there's an interesting uneasiness, which I find extremely productive, when these two memories meet. Because you're, Chaudelat is precisely about kind of rethinking the heritage, which is radical within the Soviet Union, but not necessarily radical here. The question here, kind of writ large here, is what exactly do you think about it? How do you think about the common past? What do you throw out? What do you take up? And is it, because the argument is there's something intrinsic to conductivism, just like the Stalinism, right? The kind of Boris Groys argument, or that it's the bad guy shows up and he ruins the best thing that ever happened in the 20th century. I mean, as I think it's hard to say, but I think this is the question in many ways, is how do we feel about this? How can we cope with this and move on? And I think that that's where the kind of specificity that Lindsay talks about, and at the end it becomes historical and that one. I don't know where the question is going. I think it's a point of how is the productive tension between, I think, where you're coming from and where I think I'm coming from.
Yeah, because it's a kind of contradiction, which is can be dialectical.
And it's great that you came to talk about religion precisely the one thing that nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Here, it's exactly this.
But it was in common, so it's like it happens everywhere. It's not only the case of I would be restricted about talking about specificity of any specificity of Russia. There is another, maybe the market is another construction of market, more concurrence, less money in our market. So another sources of money. That's why the discourse that Russian art is more religious, more nationalistic, because those guys are giving money for art and they control the content. Here there are more democratic institutions. You can go there and there, and everybody will give you something to make your to produce your forms of resistance within the capitalist
system. That collective lineup, maybe it's not too long. They're one of them's in jail, and so they just have to do different words.
The
question was, because you're saying that it doesn't happen, and I guess it's going to be in rap art.
Yeah.
That Voina just got this big, thousands of dollars award, but they're an art collective that did street actions, they turned over cop cars, and they're being persecuted, right? But they also got the war from the state.
I don't know about money issues in Vienna. I don't care about.
I think the point is that the specificity is important, and these details are important, right?
Right.
That
no, I
was
just saying that there's this other thing.
But Vienna is an important example because it's like a kind of super fancy. Whenever you can go in any gallery on the West, and when somebody is giving artistic talk and somebody mentioned resistance or art or something, somebody mentioned Vienna, but it's another. Those guys doing something totally different in artistic field than Stadelet. Because Stadelet, for example, we are having a certain political agenda, so it's engaged art. Vienna is more about performance art, and
I think we have the room for till 1:00, no one's going to kick us out. So I think.